Good morning and welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hello to all of you listening to us locally and streaming online. We appreciate your tuning in this morning. Today is Sunday, April 23rd, 2017. I am your host, David Pacheco, and with me in studio today is Steve Peterson. We'd love to hear from you during our live show, so please give us a call at 952-946-6205. Send an email to radio@mnatheist.org or tweet us at Atheist Talk. In 2009, the city of Belle Plaine, Minnesota, established a park on city land that was to honor local veterans. They did a masterful plan, masterful job of planning and laying out the park, and it respectfully honors all veterans of any religious affiliation or no religious affiliation equally. And sometime last fall, that all changed when the mourners of a deceased World War II veteran who was a resident of Belle Plaine placed a sculpture of a person kneeling by a rifle, a boot, and a helmet, and a large Latin cross into the park. The statue was moved from private property into the city-owned Veterans Park without permission from the city and was also placed there without consideration of how the religious sculpture would change the nature of the park or what the reaction of the residents might be. So a complaint was filed by a local resident and by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we're here today to talk to Rebecca Markert, who is the senior legal advisor to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, or FFRF, who responded on behalf of that resident, claiming that the sculpture was religious in nature and due to its placement in a government-owned and managed property was a violation of the Establishment Clause of the Constitution that mandates the separation of church and state. So on today's program, we are going to be reviewing this case, several others that FFRF has filed within the past year, and in order to do so, I'd like to welcome to our program today Rebecca Markert, Senior Legal Advisor to FFRF. Welcome to Steve, and welcome to Rebecca.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, thank you, David. Rebecca, thank you for taking your time on a Sunday morning, and did we get the facts correct as well as you know it?
As far as I know it, yes.
So when these issues come up, and this could be any town USA that this could happen, the planning of this park had been very thoughtfully done by the citizens and the city council and everything. But then an ad hoc group decided to co-opted for their own, that this was their own, and they put the religious-based sculpture on the property. But at that point, it became the city's issue because the city took no action to remove it. Would that be correct?
That is correct. They knew that it was there and didn't take any action to remove the sculpture. So it did, in effect, become a government display.
So in these cases, and just to cover a couple basic things, the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights says Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Congress, sometimes people go and they say, Congress said that. Congress shall make no law. But through the 14th Amendment and other parts of the Constitution, Congress means city councils, local government. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, the Constitution actually says very little. and we need to interpret what the Constitution means through various cases and case law. And in 1947, in a case called Everson versus Board of Education, the Supreme Court not only incorporated the Establishment Clause to the states through the 14th Amendment, but also explained what the Establishment Clause meant. And it was very expansive. It didn't just apply to Congress. It applied to state and federal governments. And then through later case law, that expanded to, you know, local governments like city councils and county boards. That decision is 70 years old this year, so it's pretty well settled that the First Amendment doesn't just apply to congressional actions. It applies to all government actions across the board.
And let's talk about that a little, because I'm not sure the concept of incorporation, which should be something that everybody in the U.S. should be familiar with. So could you explain to us what that meant at the time? So at the beginning, when the Bill of Rights was passed, it definitely did say Congress. It was definitely very specific. But then the 14th Amendment came along, and after that is when we started with this concept of incorporation. Could you explain what that concept is?
Sure. So basically, it's a constitutional principle that is laid out in the 14th Amendment or used for the 14th Amendment to make the Bill of Rights applicable to the states so that citizens of the state are availed of constitutional rights. But in a weird procedural posture, not every provision of the Bill of Rights has been deemed incorporated unless it goes through the court system and gets that status. And so that is just something that happened then in 1947 for the Establishment Clause. I think even the Second Amendment had some incorporation just within the last couple 20 years or so. But it is a sort of interesting concept. But yes, I mean, right now, everybody knows that the Bill of Rights applies to the states through this through the 14th Amendment because of the incorporation doctrine.
And in fact, a lot of the cases that we think of as First Amendment cases, Second Amendment cases, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment cases, a lot of them actually end up being about the 14th Amendment, the rulings at least. So, you know, we think of Lemon versus Kurtzman or Engel versus Vitale, several of the of the cases that that have come across as religious freedom cases or as separation of church and state cases, they end up being about the Fourth Amendment rather than about those original amendments. Sorry,
that's
the 14th Amendment.
Yeah. The 14th Amendment, yes.
So in this particular case, one point I'd still want to – the Bill of Rights is a restriction on what government can do. So it enhances individual rights at the mechanism of government not making laws to restrict those individual rights. Is that basically correct?
Yes.
So in this case, an individual made a religious sculpture, put it out in their front yard or somewhere on property that they individually owned. And in that part, it wasn't intrusive or anything, wasn't impacting anything. So government couldn't tell them to take it away. That was the right of free exercise.
That's right.
And when it was moved to government property and the government took no action to remove it, that's where it became an establishment case.
Correct. So the government cannot take any action that would prefer one religion over another or religion over no religion. And so by not removing something on their property that endorsed a religion, they were also endorsing religion, which they can't do under the Establishment Clause.
And Belle Plaine, Minnesota, town of 7,500, relatively small town, actually beautiful town. I travel through it. I've been traveling through it a couple times a month for 50 years. And the way the Veterans Park is set up, it's set up to highlight the viewing of it from the main highway, 169. And when I would travel by there and see the Veterans Park, which is highlighted by a Huey helicopter that did service in Vietnam time, I would think about veterans. So it was a very effectively designed park. But when this showed up, everybody in town pretty much knew it because it was on a main thoroughfare. It was easy to see.
What would you expect the local council, the city council, local government, what would you expect their action should be when somebody puts, pretty much anything up in one of these parks? I mean, we're talking specifically about a religious display, but this isn't a place where somebody can just go drop off a piece of public sculpture for any reason.
Right. So we would expect what they originally did in Belle Plaine, which is to removed the sculpture. I mean, they didn't do it until we had sent a letter, but normally, I mean, even private individuals, if something shows up on your property and you don't want it there, you remove it. And especially a sculpture or something that could potentially give rise to liability if it were to injure someone in some way, you would want to remove that and get rid of sort of any sort of risks associated with that. So I think like any private property owner, the government would remove something like that so once they have notice of it.
In this case here, when a complaint came from your office, according to the Belle Plaine Herald, as they seem to do a pretty good job in reviewing the facts, they went to the Minnesota League of Cities and asked for advice, and the advice was that they were on precarious grounds.
That's correct. There's actually a lot of case law surrounding crosses on public property, not just veteran memorial crosses, but just crosses on public property, and that case law is very clear. There is a case from the 1980s that involved a nativity scene at a county courthouse in Pennsylvania, but the Supreme Court touched on religious symbols in general on public property. And in that case, they said they had no doubt that a cross erected on public property would be a violation of the Constitution. And that's sort of where all of the case law has stemmed regarding crosses on public property. And then you turn to the specific memorial where crosses are used to memorialize veterans. And there's a lot of case law right now about crosses as memorials.
We have to take a really quick break. I'm sorry. Please stay with us throughout this break. We will return. We've got a lot more to talk about with our guest, Rebecca Markert. I'm your host, David Pacheco, along with Steve Peterson. You're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is Atheist Talk. I'm your host, David Pacheco, along with Steve Peterson. I'd like to remind everyone listening that immediately following this program, you can also listen to American Atheist Viewpoint, an official production from American Atheists. Stick around, and remember, American Atheist Viewpoint is always available in podcast form, and you could subscribe using Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast app. If you have any questions, feel free to call us at 952-946-6205 and send your emails to radio@mnatheist.org or tweet us at Atheist Talk. Our donor of the week is sustaining member Nancy, so thank you, Nancy, for donating and helping to keep the show on the air. Today's guest is Rebecca Markert, who is the senior legal advisor for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're talking about the case in Belle Plaine, Minnesota. So welcome back to Atheist Talk.
Hi, Rebecca. I wanted to cover a little bit. The city council had passed 3-1. One did dissent. A limited public forum for the erecting displays. And a limited public forum seems kind of silly right from the beginning. Limited tells me who is not going to be allowed in. And is that generally the intent of public forums, is to limit the speech that's allowed?
Well, so the language used, limited, doesn't mean to, you know, obviously restrict certain people. It basically is just a term of art that is used to describe the different types of fora that there are under the free speech doctrine. You have a non-public forum, a limited or designated public forum, and then a traditional public forum. And so traditionally, if you have a space that's a traditional public forum, anybody can use it, and that is usually like the National Mall or something like that, where people can congregate and express their rights. When you have a piece of property that doesn't fit that category, it's called the government can open up a limited public forum, which is what the city council did in this case, and that gives them a certain amount of control over who can put up displays or use the park for events and things like that. The weird thing is that it is a veterans park, and typically veterans parks aren't open to those types of events like some other parks would be. But I guess in a sense it does restrict who can use the park, but that's subject to the approval of the government.
And in this case here, they cited Capitol Square and advisory board versus Panetta. And when I read that case, not being a lawyer, it was about people – it was a free speech zone for individual use of the day of public speech. Minnesota Atheist wants to go down to the public square and have our day of reason or something like that. It allows us to use that space. That's how I interpreted that particular case law. Are you familiar with that case?
Yes, yes. It is one of the seminal free speech cases. It involved a large cross as well that the Ku Klux Klan was planning to erect, and their display was upheld by the Supreme Court on free speech grounds, but it was a temporary display. What happened in Belle Plaine was a little bit different. In Capitol Square, the policy existed before the Ku Klux Klan wanted to use the park. In Belle Plaine, there was no such policy for the public park. In fact, the policy was generated to restore this cross memorial to the park. And so just that idea that the city council put together this policy so that they could restore a Christian symbol to a public park has a religious purpose and would be unconstitutional. That didn't exist in Capitol Square.
So in traditional public forums, these limited public forums as well, the government can't discriminate against speakers. They can't decide you can speak and you may not based on viewpoints. They do have the ability to restrict a manner of speech, right? You can't necessarily use a bullhorn at 5 o'clock in the morning on Sundays. You know, they can do that kind of restrictions, but they can't restrict on what you're saying or the content of their message or the viewpoint of your message. So what is it about in this particular case? If whether this is a limited or a general traditional public forum, what is it that makes it a problematic for somebody to express a religious perspective, a religious opinion, a religious viewpoint?
So now that it's they've designated a limited public forum, that same principle would apply. They cannot discriminate based on viewpoint. So whatever the person wants to say, they would have to allow unless it meets those certain exemptions that you mentioned. So they put up the cross memorial. They would also have to put up something that FFRF would want to place in the park or the Satanic Temple. So they cannot discriminate. And that was actually one of the concerns that people within the city and on the city council mentioned when they were debating this policy, was that we actually now have no control over what goes up in that park. It has to be related to veterans. You know, it has to sort of honor the space. But really, they don't have a lot of control over what that message needs to be. And it really could create a circus in the park, which would sort of negate the purpose of the park and the decorum of the space and the sacredness of the space for memorializing veterans.
Yeah, it seems to be a complete distraction from the purpose of the park in the first place to even have this discussion. Right? The focus of the park is supposed to be about veterans. So is it okay for the government in this particular case to say we only want exhibits here, we only want statues that are related to the point of the park? I mean, that it does seem to be kind of a viewpoint discrimination in some way to say you can only talk about these things in these limited public forums.
No, that's okay. Generally, I mean, the purpose of the park is a veterans park, so it is generally okay for them to say we want it to be about veterans. But I mean, I think the policy as a whole is subject to litigation, because I do believe that it's not completely on solid ground, mostly because the whole genesis of the policy was to restore a Christian symbol, and that religious purpose is not appropriate when the government is taking an action like this. You had huge rallies and a lot of people talking about how important it was to have a religious symbol there. So I really think that the purpose behind it was religious in nature as well. I think the policy as a whole is on shaky legal ground.
It definitely seems to be, and I think we'll want to find out what comes next in this particular case too. But we do have to take a really quick break, so please stay with us. Through this break, we will return to Atheist Talk with our guest, Rebecca Markert from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This is your host, David Pacheco, with Steve Peterson, and you are listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I am your host, David Pacheco, here in the studio along with Steve Peterson. If you have a question or comment, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email to radio at mnatheists.org. Many of you know us from listening live to the show, streaming it from our website, or listening to the podcast. Atheist Talk is kept on the air with funding from Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina. The program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donation of listeners. If you are able to make a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page, where you can also find archives of previous shows and more information about the many, many activities, events, and opportunities that we have, including book clubs, discussion groups, pub crawls, movie nights, and many others. The odds are that you'll find something to interest you throughout the year. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization, and we couldn't do it without you. So please subscribe, become a member, and receive the Atheist Weekly email. Our music is composed by member Brent Michael Davids and is used with permission. Steve Peterson and Rebecca Markert from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Welcome back to Atheist Talk.
Hey, Rebecca. Thank you for staying with us. I wanted to do 2 points about the Belle Plaine Limited Public Forum. One, the council member that voted against it cited, confirming your concerns that the Minnesota League of Cities did not give the okay on it, that they still thought it had shaky grounds. But the other part, they did okay a satanic temple display. And then the city administrator had said, under received criticism from citizens that didn't like the idea of a satanic temple display, but said, well, they had a plaque that's going to say in honor of Belle Plaine residents, and that was all that was needed to put it up there. But they had no local resident support of any kind that I know of. They might have local resident support. So they're confirming basically what you just said on that the limited public forum is going to have something of restrictions on how it's used.
That's right.
Now, limited public forums are – FFRF runs into these all over. It's been years that FFRF has dealt with limited public forums or public forums, and usually over nativity displays.
That's right. And because the law seems to be more favorable, a lot of governments tend to establish these types of policies, especially when there's some sort of longstanding tradition like a nativity scene that's been put up for 40 years that, you know, a private group has donated to the city or erects every year on public property. And it's just been the way it has been for the last, like, 40, 60 years. And then a group like ours or another group complains saying, actually, you can't do this, then sometimes the governments will turn to this remedy of just establishing a forum, and then that will make everything okay. And when that happens, then FFRF is faced with the choice. Either you, you know, challenge the policy itself, or you seek inclusion and ask to put up a display as well.
That happened.
And those are the two options that we have here in Belle Plaine as well.
That happened in Belle Plaine over a nativity scene.
But, in Wadena. In Wadena, Minnesota. It happened a couple of years ago.
But the experience of FFRF have been a lot of the displays that FFRF have put up have been vandalized. And I know Dan Barker, spokesperson for FFRF, said access to a public forum really is no good if somebody's going to vandalize it and not protect it.
That's true. And, you know, every year when we, during the month of December, when we put up our winter solstice displays around the country in these types of fora, you know, most of the new ones do get vandalized or stolen in some way. And we generally put them back up as quickly as we can. But after a while, what we've found is that that sort of seems to die down. In the Wisconsin State Capitol, for example, when we started putting up our winter solstice display back in the 1980s, we had the same situation where it was vandalized. I think it was spat on, and all sorts of things happened to it.
If I remember correctly, there was a video of a woman going in and starting to tear it down. It was that was the one at the Capitol.
Right. But now, you know, it's just become a display that happens every December in the Capitol, and people don't really bat an eye on it. And that is actually what we find with most of our complaints. Once we get the government to do the right thing, either by stopping the violation or through seeking inclusion after they've done something like this, the first year after that, everything is explosive and people are very angry. But then it all seems sort of to die down and people become more I guess, accepting is the only word I can think of. But, you know, the emotions are really high usually in the very beginning, but they're not sustained.
It becomes a new tradition, right? People seem to be offended when something that's been going on for about 40 years, as it happened in Wadena, all of a sudden there's a change. They don't like that. But when it becomes the new normal, it becomes a new tradition, people seem to be okay. So it's now been 2 years approximately since the Wadena case. What has happened there? What was the current state in Wadena? To a little bit of feedback there, there's a big plaster nativity set that the government would put out every year in a downtown park. And it was the only sculpture, the only set that that the government would put out, and obviously very religious in nature. What's the current state there?
You know, I don't know the facts of the Wadena case. And so I don't have I don't normally handle Minnesota for FFRF. I handle cross displays, which is why this one landed in my lap. So I'm not exactly sure what's happening there now. Well, I would have to do some research to find out for you. I'm sorry.
And, a case I think you did work on is Santa Barbara, where they had a 15-foot Latin sculpture cross. It was, and that was just a big case for FFRF. Were you a part of that case?
Yes. I think you're referring to the Santa Clara case, where, yes, it was a large cross in a public park near the San Jose airport, right on the border between San Jose and Santa Clara. That cross was marking the site of a Catholic mission, but it wasn't a cross that was original to the site. It was put up there much, much later. And when we wrote to the city of Santa Clara, they said, you know, yes, we know that this is not constitutional, and we will work to get it removed. The odd thing about that was it took about 4 years. And they were still, it was just sort of a lot of, yes, we're moving it, give us some time, it's going to take some time. And then we did have to file a lawsuit after we thought they're not going to move it. And once we filed the lawsuit, it did light a fire under them, and it was removed and taken to more appropriate location at the Jesuit University in town there. And so now the public park doesn't have a cross, which is actually a very good victory for FFRF, because a lot of times when we have these types of displays, another solution is to just transfer the land to a public entity and not remove it at all. But in this case, the city did the right thing and just removed the park and kept, or removed the cross and kept the park for its use.
So it seems that those seem to be the three alternatives, right? Other than fighting back and eventually losing a legal battle, it seems to be to remove the sculpture, to make it a limited public forum as it is here, to transfer a part of the land to private property, or to just keep it around and see what happens, or and see like in California, just wait and see if you stop paying attention to it after 4 years.
Right.
There's in Belle Plaine, what they tried to do was claim that the Latin cross was not religious. Mm. And even the local Catholic pastor was claiming that it might not be religious. Even the nativity scene, he said that just could be three people on the way to the hobby farm, three artists on the way to a hobby farm, which I thought was quite – I thought, well, if I wrote that, I'd probably be called blasphemy.
Exactly. I mean, it is sort of bizarre that they suddenly take away the religious aspect of it when it's convenient for them. But so many people and the Supreme Court and various federal courts have said when you look at a Christian cross, that's what you see. You see Christianity. You see Jesus. I don't think when you look at a cross, you see veterans. That doesn't come to mind. It's the religious thing that immediately comes to mind.
Well, and the other part of it could be that people who are so used to the cross as a symbol in a graveyard, if they're going to a Catholic graveyard particularly, they're so used to their preference or privilege in society being acknowledged that they've lost the religiosity of the concept of it sometimes.
Right. And there is this fallacy of a cross being a symbol of death in some way. And that's just not necessarily true. It's not historically true. But, you know, with the Christian majority, they believe that it is. And I think to a certain extent they believe that it's fine and there is no religiosity to it. But when you get into a more diverse population, then yes, people say no. That's not a symbol of death. It's not an appropriate grave marker for me or for my family.
So, what's the next step here in Belle Plaine? I mean, it's been presented as a limited public forum, and technically, they've got space for about, I think, 10 different displays, and they're supposed to allow any religious or non-religious point of view in that limited public display. What's the next step for FFRF? What are you planning to do in this particular case?
So, we're still considering our options. Like I said, I don't think that the policy would pass constitutional muster if we took it to court because there is a religious intent behind it. So we are exploring the possibility of suing the city over the policy in general. But we are also talking to companies in Minnesota and here in Madison about designing our own monument that could go up in the park. One of the other concerns that we have is that, you know, most policies involving limited public forum also limits the time that you're able to put something on display. The policy in Belle Plaine limits the time, but also gives people renewal time. So it, in effect, allows a monument to be up there permanently.
We will have to stop here. We're running out of time. But thank you so much, Rebecca, for being with us today. And thank you, everybody, for listening to us today. Our guest today was Rebecca Markert, Senior Legal Advisor to the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Thanks for being on the show, Rebecca.
Thank you.
I would like to thank our audience for tuning in to Atheist Talk. I am your host, David Pacheco, and on behalf of myself and Steve Peterson, we invite you to join us again next Sunday on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Have a nice Sunday. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, April 23rd, 2017. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and I'm joined this week by our National Legal and Public Policy Director, Amanda Kniff. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining me, and thank you, as always, for listening, everyone. This week, we had oral arguments in a Trinity Lutheran Church case that we've talked about previously on this segment, which is a case that deals a lot with some really interesting questions on church-state separation, specifically what are called Blaine Amendments, this one out of Missouri. That's why Amanda's here. Amanda, as I mentioned, is our national legal director. Amanda handles a lot of our legal strategy and is an expert on constitutional law. So that's why I thought it would be important to have someone who actually knows what they're talking about this case. So thank you, Amanda. So first of all, can you just give me a little brief update on what exactly this case is? Can you give sort of the basic details of the case?
Sure. So the state Missouri had a program that allowed people to apply for a grant to repay them for putting used tire material on playground surfaces. So if an organization went ahead and did this, they could then apply to the state to be reimbursed as part of a grant program. And I think, and so what happened is the church, Trinity Lutheran, has a playground as part of its school on its church property, and they applied for the grant. And even though they ranked like fourth or fifth out of all the several dozen applicants, they were denied the money because of a provision in the Missouri Constitution that says that no money from the treasury shall go to benefit or to finance any clergy or religious organization.
Right. And I think so that's the state constitutional question that was kind of at play here. This is the reason that the governor at the time had that requirement in. And in fact, the new governor who was just sworn in this last year reversed that, said we're not going to punish churches for this. We're not going to have he said something about my predecessor put in place a policy that didn't allow churches to get access to this stuff. And it's interesting because it's not a policy. It was a constitutional requirement that's
right
in the Missouri Constitution.
And so depending on how this Supreme Court case comes out, his new, executive order allowing churches to receive grants could be unconstitutional. Again, it just depends on what the Supreme Court says.
Right. So this case was taken way back in like 2015, wasn't it? November 2015. And they just haven't heard it yet because they were waiting to fill the vacancy left after the death of Antonin Scalia. That was one of the reasons why this Gorsuch nomination was so closely watched by those of us in church-state separation. So on the details of the case, let's talk just a little bit about, like, who cares? Why does it matter? Why shouldn't a church get funding like this? Why do these Blaine Amendments exist?
Okay, so the Blaine Amendment is named after a member of Congress who proposed this idea that Catholic churches and Catholic schools were becoming too prominent and were getting government money for education. And so they tried to pass it nationally. It didn't work. But 39 states have provisions. Now, some of them predate this. Like Missouri's actually predates the so-called Blaine Amendments. It's called that because it's pretty much the same as other states that did it at the time of Blaine and after that. But it actually predates it. And what it does is it says that you can't spend government money to finance churches. We give houses of worship special privileges in this country. They're automatically exempt from property taxes. They're exempt from federal income tax. Donations to them can be deducted from your own income tax. And we don't require them to tell the public how they're spending money. And in return for that, they don't get government money. It's to avoid the entanglement. Both, we don't want the church to get government money and be endorsed by the government. And we don't want churches to have to answer to the government for what they're doing on religious practices. And so that's really what this comes down to is, can the state, can it say that it's not going to give money and discriminate, basically say you can't have state money if you're a house of worship? And that's really the question, is whether or not it's okay for a state to do that. And, we go back to Madison who said that, you know, not even 2 pence should be spent on a church or on a house of worship. And so it's just kind of a fundamental question about whether the burden on those who are religious, who want state money, is large enough to overcome the state's right not to endorse and not to sponsor religious activity.
Right. And one of the important things that I think is important to draw a distinction here is the church could very easily have set up a separate nonprofit entity that was a legally separate group that was a nonprofit that followed all the same rules that a secular nonprofit has to. They could have incorporated the school as a secular group and would have qualified for this money. There's nothing saying that they would have had to that the church itself has to be the one to apply to this. But instead, what happened was they chose not to. You know, they wanted to stay incorporated as the church. They applied as a church, knowing that there's that prohibition, that was not allowed under the Missouri Constitution. And so that I find that a little interesting, and that I think that's an important thing to say, that it's not religious people who are being discriminated against in any way. It's that if you're a church, if you are a house of worship, the idea is that the government shouldn't be funding you.
Correct. And so we just look at whether or not, as a society, we want state funds and government funds to go to these houses of worship.
Right. Absolutely. Do we have any idea on what it looks like how the court's going to be ruling on this?
Normally, a couple of justices we would normally think of being strong on separation of religion and government, Kagan and Breyer, both seem to express some sympathy for the church and that there was a burden on their practice of religion in not being able to get these funds. I am highly skeptical of that. I'm very concerned that we're actually going to get a unanimous decision that these unconstitutional or these provisions that are in 39 state constitutions will somehow be unconstitutional. I think it's more likely that the court will try to chip away at the absolute mandate that you can't have religion and government mixing with money in this way. I think they will probably make some either exemption, or they will erode the separation of church and state a little bit more.
Yeah, you think they're probably going to try to rule on the narrowest grounds possible.
I think that that's in order to get a larger consensus. I think that's probably likely. It really depends on Kennedy, Kagan, and Breyer and where they stand.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Thank you, Amanda, for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time. And thank you, everyone who's listening, for joining us. For more information about what we're working on, please visit our website, www.atheists.org. And we will talk to you next week. Take care.